This is Yiftach part 5, where we're discussing the second part of and trying to understand the neder of Yiftach. So, where we had left it last time was that the Ramban was describing a particular halacha that occurs in the Torah, something which occurs in Parshas Bechukosai, and it talks about how there's the ability of a person of making something called a cherem. The cherem can affect possessions and it can affect humans. It seems like when it affects humans, it ends up killing them. That's what it sounds like the cherem affects. So the Ramban explains that really there are two tracks in the way cherems are created. Either you refer to your own possessions, and then in that way they become holy, they become sanctified, they belong to the Beis HaMikdash, the Kohanim. More specifically, it actually says to the priests, not the Mikdash itself. And then track two is when you're fighting against enemies, and you now make your enemies a cherem, it means that you're going to kill them all without any spoils. Those are the two tracks he understands. So, and he gives examples throughout history where you see that making such a cherem and not listening to it would be punishable by death. So the people of Anshi Yavesh Gilad who did not join the rest of Israel in fighting against the tribe of Binyamin, which was revolting, were killed. Similarly, the Yonasan tasted food when Shaul put a cherem on tasting food on the day of the battle in order that they should be able to pursue their enemies to the full end. And in such a case as well, he was liable for death if he weren't saved by the fact that neder was uprooted or undermined. So that's what that's how he sees in a theoretical construct this idea of cherem. And the problem with Yiftach is that Yiftach felt that such a cherem was also applicable if you make a zevach, if you make somebody a sacrifice. There's no way you could go back on it on the pain of death. So he felt that he was bound by this notion. The problem is that just if you just take a stop. This is where we ended off with the Ramban last time, with the way the Ramban understands Yiftach. But if you're to ask the Ramban, so what was he thinking? Let's just take this the question backwards. What was Yiftach thinking as he made this neder?
So we all said maybe an animal would walk out of the house.
But if it was an animal that couldn't be used for like a dog.
Exactly. So exactly. Exactly. It's very hard to understand how. How,
did he not know he had a daughter living in his house?
Right. So the measures.
What if a cat had walked out? What if a donkey had walked out?
Any of these things, however, he did have a daughter living in the house.
He wasn't necessarily thinking of his daughter.
Right. But
meaning in terms of the family,
his house, meaning whatever he possessed, his house. You know, like it was
saying,
you know, animals, but
animals.
Timna's pointing out is, well, animals were in Timna has a point over here, is that she let me in a magazine which discusses actually living in the house plan of living in the Near East, which is interesting, meaning archaeologists do a lot of research in this. And where the animals actually live in the house. So there definitely is, I'm trying to find the plan over here. Animals certainly lived in the house. Now we're fine thinking, meaning there's lots of different ways, meaning there's the plan of the house. It would be that there would be as this Tim, thank you, Tina, for providing this. This is an archaeological magazine of. Is the animals that actually live in some of the side rooms over there as well? So there is. It's hard to speculate just because, you know, what specific era, what was his living quarters looking like. But certainly, from having done excavations, they have made some conclusions that animals would live in the house as well. So there is a notion of animals living in the house. However, I do want to be specific over here in the Ramban's words. If you just turn to page 11. I don't think that he's intending for that, just out of interest, just the way he describes it. Just to read the paragraph again, where the Ramban describes this is on page 11 in the notes. It's the first paragraph in the big box, which is Mistake of Yiftach with Ramban in parentheses. So just to recap, V'zeh ha'yotu ta'uso shel Yiftach b'bitoy. The mistake of Yiftach with his daughter was, Ki choshav kasher cherem nagid Yisrael, chal v'kayam lahamis anashim, he felt that a leader of the nation of Israel who made a cherem to kill other people must listen to that cherem and kill them. A person who transgresses such a cherem will be liable for death. Kain im neder b'shas milchama le'alasos ish oy anashim zevach yachul haneder. He also felt that if a person will make a neder to kill, to make a sacrifice of a human at the time of war, he thinks that would also fulfill itself. Now it sounds like if you're to ask the Ramban, what was Yiftach actually doing? It sounds like he really was making a human sacrifice. Now, for why, how, we don't. But it sounds like at this point in time, he really intended, and it might have been irrational, been in a flash of power at the time, whatever it was. But it sounds like the way the Ramban describes it is that he really did intend that if there were to be a human coming out of his house. And he made a mistake, and he felt that he was locked into it. And we're going to discuss why he couldn't get out of that.
He only had one child.
Tanakh tells us that he had one child. So he very much, it sounds like from the way he's describing it, that he feels that such a neder, his original intent may have been on a human as well.
So what human, other than a sword?
Could have been anybody. It could have been a servant. It could have been, meaning that's still up. Meaning it sounds like whoever as a...
Sounds risky.
Does, very risky. But he didn't know that it only works. You can only make the second track of cherem on people who are rebelling against the king, not people who are peaceful, who are got nothing to do with this, nothing to do with the conflict. But it should never work on somebody who's not really part of the party of being part of the neder. So that's the way Ramban understands it. So I just want to clarify this point, which you didn't clarify at the end of last time, is it sounds like from the Ramban that he understands that really the original intent was a human, which is really the dramatic irony for him is that it was his daughter. It could have been a servant maybe, but it sounds like and that was his mistake, was feeling that it even worked. It doesn't work. It doesn't.
Well, only if you made that neder. Mm-hmm. Let's to recap. He made the neder, and so Rambam feels that it could have been a human sacrifice, but the Sanhedrin says that it can only be on someone who is Morid HaMelech.
Correct.
Or something like that.
Correct. So therefore, he was not actually activating the Torah's halachic process called cherem in the first place. He thought he was. He thought he was locked into that process, but he really didn't even affect it because.
Did he feel like he was so learned?
So interesting. So we're going to get to Chazal's reflection on his on how learned he was, in fact.
What's the halacha of making a neder that is not halachic?
It doesn't work. It's called nedre shav. Let's say I make a neder. Let's take a shvua. Shvua is a little more simpler because a shvua is similar. But if I take a shvua and I say that this table is made of gold. Then I will get Malkus because I've transgressed making a false shua because it's something which I can't really affect. Right? That's one aspect of what's called shua's shav. Another thing is, let's say, and this is just to make to dilute it a little bit. What happens if I say I'm going to eat cake in the next day? I make a shua that I'm going to eat cake in the next day, and I don't eat by the end of 24 hours. Then I get Malkus at that point for not fulfilling that I'm doing on something which is not.
No, but. What happens if you make a shvua that you will fly independently? Like, in other words, something that is impossible to do. Like, mm-hmm. It's, you're not.
Then it doesn't work.
Then it doesn't work.
It doesn't work, and you get Malkus. Exactly. Exactly. It's something
what
which doesn't work.
You,
it's
you,
if
you,
it,
Malkus.
You get Malkus, meaning to say you've transgressed using the name of Hashem to create a shvua, but it has no effect. If you say, for another example, would be if you say, I'm not going to sleep for more than 3 days, then you've automatically transgressed that because no human can survive without sleep for 3 days. So the Gemara discusses a number of these cases, but that would be exactly like you said,
wasn't as good as possible. Like, he could do it, but
he's not even halachically allowed to.
Boundaries.
So, well, it would be even, this would be similar to what would be a case of, let's say you say that you make a neder, or a shvua. Neder is by making something osur. Neder is where you in place on something some forms of halachic isur. Shvua is actually an action. You can mandate action. So if you make a shvua that that you are allowed to eat pig meat, that would be something over here, like similar to that. It doesn't work because what's you're called mushba v'omed mehar Sinai. You are sworn in to the Torah covenant from Sinai. So now doing anything else is going to is going to be irrelevant. And yeah, so so according to Ramban, he made a complete mistake at the beginning. From day one, it was a mistake. However, the Ibn Ezra is going to tweak it to make it a little more subtle over here. And this enters into an interesting area of Judaism, which the Ibn Ezra is about to touch on over here. So just to conclude, this is the Ramban quoting the Ibn Ezra. Unfortunately for us, we don't have this Ibn Ezra in text. Meaning, although the Ibn Ezra is quoted as saying this, we don't find any indication of him ever saying this himself. It's because possibly the text of Ibn Ezra on this section of Tanakh was lost. But we have it here. Ba'altihi nifte bahavlei Rabbeinu Avraham. Don't be seduced by the emptiness of Rabbi Avraham, who is the Ibn Ezra, Avraham ben Ezra. So he really just dislikes what the Ibn Ezra is about to say as he quotes him. This is the Ramban quoting the Ibn Ezra saying, don't be seduced by his emptiness, right? He doesn't like this understanding. And you'll see why in a second. He's very sharp about things. The Ramban's very sharp about certain, and sometimes he praises him very highly. But in certain cases, the Ramban's very sharp against particular people and some things they say.
He disagrees with everybody.
Not necessarily. The Ramban not necessarily. The Ramban wrote two books which actually defended the Rif, Rav Yitzhak Alfasi from Fez, who was one of the earliest codifiers of the Gemara in a consistent manner. You find him at the back of every Gemara, the Rif. Well, somebody wrote a critique on that called the Baal HaMa'or, the owner of the light. And the Ramban wrote a book against him, a response to him defending Rav Yitzhak Alfasi called Simil Chamos Hashem, the War of God. He speaks on it as a war. He really takes it seriously.
He never criticized the Rif.
Never. Never, ever. And so he felt first of all, that this is a tangent, but he felt that the Baal HaMa'or was, the Baal HaMa'or wrote his critique on the Rif at the age of 17. So he felt that that was an upstart. And therefore, he was very defensive about this book. But there's another book that the Ravid, that's Rav Avram ben, I don't remember David, I think it is, who wrote a critique on the Rif on a particular Masechet Gittin. He wrote a response to that, but he called it Sefer HaZchut, the book of merit, to find merit for the Rif, again defending the Rif. But because he felt that the Ravid was more of a stature, he was more. Anyway, this is very fascinating stuff. When you read the Ramban, it's a very powerful, very sharp person. The more you read, the more you gain the sense of intellect and brilliance that he has. Anyway, so the Ramban says, don't be seduced by the emptiness of this particular thought. What does he say? Ha'omer, who says, ki pirush v'ha'alitihu ola, o v'ha'alitihu. And when it says v'ha'alitihu ola, it means, or I will bring him up as a sacrifice. Lomar. So what does this mean? Im yihye hayotse midal sebesi ish o isha v'hayal Hashem. If there's two alternatives now in the neder, if option one, the person coming out of my door happens to be a human being, then they'll be to God. What does it mean to be to God? Kodesh, they'll be holy. She yihye parush midarke olam la'amod l'sharez b'shem Hashem b'tfila v'hodos l'elokim. That really, the option number one, is that they will be segregated from the rest of humanity to be serving Hashem in purity without involvement in this world. That's option one. Option two is v'im yihye davar ra'u likarevet alenu ola. But if it would be something which I can sacrifice, then what? Then I'll bring it up as a sacrifice. V'asa bayit levito mechutz la'ir. And then, therefore, because the person who came out was a human, so he made a house for his daughter outside of the city. V'izbodado sham. And she was alone there. The kilkala kol yomeha, and he sustained her all her days. The ish lo yada'an, she had no relationship with a man. Vayisa b'tzarura, and his daughter was tied up. So over here, just to work through this, the major point at this point of distinction is when he reads the words of Yiftach, he views it as not the ha'aliti olah, and I will bring that which goes out of my house as an olah. It's not la Hashem and I will bring them as an olah, but either to Hashem or as an olah. Two options depending on what it is. So if you're to sit down and interview the Ibn Ezra as opposed to the Ramban, what did Yiftach intend? So he says, well, it depends who would walk out. Right? So to clarify that point. It would depend who walks out. Either segregation for a human or sacrifice for an animal, which seems a little less irrational. Well, let's remove the double negative. It's a little more rational, right?
You have to do
That's what it sounds like. That's what it sounds like. You mean you can do such things. You can say this or this creating and when you're creating a netter, you can do these kind of things. So maybe he meant that there were two options in what he was sanctifying.
Does he have any halachic power to give over somebody else? Oh. Like his daughter, maybe,
right.
Because she's under a certain age.
Right,
but who else coming out could he actually...
That's a great question. So you see, what we've done is we've diluted the drama of the situation, that he's not trying to kill anybody, but still, Ruth's pointing out, is that he's still doing something to somebody which is beyond his rights. Meaning, does he have the rights over his daughter? So some of the folks should discuss, you know, if the people who live in his house are sustained by him, if he has the... It's a good question. I think we have to still consider that. Meaning, I think it still has to be something which troubles us, that to the degree to which he wields this power. There's something which is hard for us to understand. Yeah.
I think because of his background, he wanted to raise himself up by his bootstraps and put himself up there. I hate to say what I just got to. I mean,
he's trying to raise himself
himself to such a level, sort of comparing himself to Abraham.
Rabin, meaning there's an aspect of arrogance. You see the irony in
right,
you,
right.
You're
I
right.
I think he was an egomaniac, and there was it.
Well, the irony is that we're going to see in this action and in a later action, when we get to the war of the Ephraim, that there's a certain element of seems to be ego over here, of it seems to be. That there's a notion of trying to get self-perpetuation, and unfortunately the irony of it is that it's where that which is guarantees his destruction, meaning
right.
His legacy disappears through the action which he tries to. So it's just interesting how the irony. There's another few ironies which are going to come out in this actually as well as we get to the Medrash about that particular point. So I'd like to develop that. Why would you think this is not a tenable chat? We're about to read why the Ramban is upset about this. Why do you think that this is not something the Ramban will like? Why would the Ramban say this? Don't be seduced by such an idea in this section.
It doesn't fit with the shot of the text.
Well, okay, so you should know that Ibn Ezra elsewhere in Tanakh does this and will say the idea that the means oi, and there are a number of places where see in Tanakh.
That's what I'm saying. What actually ends up happening, his daughter goes 2 months, and then it seems like it's the end. It's not, like I'm saying... The end result.
Well, the thing is remember, as we saw, it's ambiguous what it does. He says he did his neder. So it could mean that doing the neder is actually secluding her, or it could mean doing the neder is killing her, as the Ramban would say. So the ambiguity sort of couches it somewhat. Part of the problem is just the ideal. The ideal is incorrect in a Jewish from a Jewish standpoint. So take a look at what the Ramban says in this. Ve'elu divrei ruach. These are the words of wind, meaning these are empty. If a person makes a neder that an individual, a human being, will be to God, that doesn't mean that they're going to be separate. It'll be like Shmuel. Chana said, I will give my child to Hashem. What did that end up meaning? Doesn't mean that Shmuel never got married. Shmuel had children. Shmuel was involved in the world. What happened? He just happened to be that he served God. He was in the house of God. Doesn't mean to say that he was living in the middle of the woods as a hermit.
A Nazir.
So he was not very. He was
interesting.
Really not
we
very
do have
good.
A concept of Nazir.
So
we do. You're right.
He had no background.
They said he was very poorly educated.
Okay, so we're going to get to the point of poor education in that sense. The Midrash is going to critique him on that particular point. But the idea is
it says Nisativ Hashem is different than Halitiv.
Well, Halitiv, according to the Ibn Ezra, is referring to the animal option. V'hayola Hashem is referring to the human option. Remember, he's dividing up the words of Yiftach into two. V'hayola Hashem would be the parallel to the Nisativ La Hashem. So he thinks that there should be a direct parallel, and it should mean just serving in the house of God.
But a woman doesn't serve. It wasn't
applicable to her, right?
Right, but you're right, that's a good point. I'm wondering, but I'm sure there could have been another option. Meaning there could have been another option of what it would have been. Meaning, let's say the wives of... Maybe she should have married a Kohen, or maybe she should have... Whatever else it would have been, there could have been another option. What the Ramban's arguing is not necessarily that there is another option, or what it should be, is that this isn't an option.
Prusha isn't, right.
Right, we don't have such a thing in Judaism.
We really...
Right. We don't believe in sitting up on the top of mountaintops without involvement in the world. And that's his continuation. And this is referring to a little bit to what Ruth was saying, that you don't have the power to say that people come out of your house should be secluded. Kasher and biyod la samola, just that you don't have the power to sacrifice them, which is what just the point that Ruth was making. And if it were true, if that's true, then why are all her friends and herself weeping over her seclusion? It's like it's like praising an esnan. An esnan is an animal given to a prostitute, right? Meaning what? Why are they weeping? They're weeping that she can't have a life of marriage. So that's what they're weeping the loss of. Life is marriage. Life is involvement in the world. Why are they weeping over that as if that's bad? No, sorry, other way around.
The other way around. It should be good,
but they're weeping over it. So that's the problem. And it would not make sense that there would be 4 days a year that the girls would be weeping because she is serving God in purity. This is arguing on the opposite side. If she was totally secluded, it means that it was as it was understood simply, which is she was killed. And it's a mistake if you move away from what I explained it to be. So very strong about his words. The thing is that. No. When it comes to, you should actually read part of his introduction to Milchama Sashem. It's just good to get a perspective of Ramban as a whole. In his introduction to Milchama Sashem, he says that nobody can really arrive at full 100% truth. We deal with probabilities. So we try to get the most likely of what we have. Which is interesting. He speaks a lot of humility before he's about to
give his own opinion up here.
What I'm saying is that when he says things very strongly, you should be aware of his introduction of the background of that. Mm-hmm. So Ramban's a very, very incredible pirush to read as a whole, because he fits in everything he says, fits together with itself. It's very fascinating. What I wanted to just bring in over here, as you just turn back one page, is this notion of seclusion is discussed in the Barbanel in an interesting manner. Because the Barbanel says, and this is the actual text in the middle of the page 10, it says, this is in the text which is not the Nas Bar Ilan font, this is directly from the Barbanel. It says, because Barbanel is not on Bar Ilan yet, at least, so if anybody wants to write a petition, the Kavonasi, Shimize Lomdu, Eishes Edom, La Sois Bate Prisha, Cloister, Lenashim, Shikansu Shama. So he says that from here, the Christian woman would have an idea, would have this idea called these houses of seclusion, which are called cloisters. That women, the nunneries, right? The women would separate themselves. And they would never leave them all their lives. And they would never be seen by men. While they were still living, so it's interesting. Just the Abarbanel sort of looking at this from
he
lived in the 1500s. So he's been able to see in history this thing developing. But I would say that this would feed into the Ramban's argument, is that it's not a Jewish concept, perhaps. Meaning it's not a Jewish concept. We don't have that. So just to think about that in terms of historical context, what he may argue is that maybe there was an aspect of it being a Jewish concept, but it was misconstrued into this. Which is very fascinating how this evolves. Another interesting thing which comes out of this. Sorry.
But if he says mizer, he's not talking about the midrashim. He's talking about
from the story.
Tanakh.
Exactly.
So. In other words,
meaning, the way that previous Christians viewed this,
yes.
which is interesting because they are obviously seeing something in the story as positive, which is funny, you know, because whatever, it's just that's exactly what you're not supposed to be seeing in the story. So,
but they saw this possibility
as an example.
In the Tanakh.
But they saw it as something to use it as an example, which is.
But they didn't go to Midrashim.
Right.
They saw it.
But they have the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament. But the thing is that something which we view as something which is a negative thing, whereas Ibn Ezra was trying to justify it and saying that maybe there was something positive about what he was doing, right? And that's where this we move off over here.
I'm
said there was something positive. He just said this was the best of two bad
evils. I hear that. I hear that. I thought when I read the Ibn Ezra that he was doing something which was a which was an option, which was definitely a viable option.
It was viable. It doesn't mean it was good.
Good. Okay. Fine. So you would argue back at the Ramban in that respect. I mean, he wasn't saying this is something one should do. This is something one can do.
So did she get killed or didn't she?
Well, that would depend exactly on this point. But what I want to just be clarify is once you work out if she's killed or not, then you have to go back and see what was the original intent. I just find it also interesting that a friend of mine, Rabbi Rosenbaum, pointed out that when it talks about the mirrors that are at the that make up the kiyor in the Beis Hamikdash, even Ezra over there says a fascinating thing. He says that it wasn't referring to mirrors; it's referring to maros hatzavos. What's that referring to? That's referring to a number of women who would seclude themselves and stay separate from people at the near the Mishkan, and that was their way of life. And the Ramban again over there says that's not an option. Just an interesting sort of carryover, where the Ramban says no, exactly the opposite. In fact, based on the Midrash, that these are the mirrors that were used by the women to seduce their husbands in order to continue the propagation of the Jewish people, even at a time when logically it should have seemed otherwise, which is just fascinating. Fascinating point. Anyways, but it's just interesting how consistent, and I've not seen throughout Tanakh, but this is just one point where you see just this distinction in viewing asceticism in general. Anyways, I'd like to just now address the question which many of you brought up over here, which is why it was, okay, so he made a mistake, or either a more gross or less gross mistake. But what happened? Why couldn't they rectify it? After all, now there's time to deal with it. It's in the newspapers. It's 2 months. Things are going on. Why can't they rectify what's going on? So for this, there's a section in the Midrash, actually in Parshas Bechukosah, which is where we found the Ramban, and that is on page 9, which actually deals with this exact point, which sort of highlights the tragedy of this whole situation. The Midrash says as follows. I'd like to read a little bit inside, just to see the back and forth between him and his daughter. And this is all filled in because, of course, we don't have their conversation in Tanakh. I'm starting from the second paragraph, which says argument between Yiftach and daughter. It says Kevon Shebikesh Lekarvo, when he wanted to sacrifice her, because remember the Midrash is going to take the sacrificing very seriously. Ha'isa Bocha Lefanav, she was crying in front of him. Amra loy, he said to her, Amra loy bitoy, his daughter said to her, Avi, yatsasi likrasacha, I went out to meet you, besimcha, in joy, vato shachetosi, and you're coming to kill me? I mean, I was doing everything for you, I was loyal to you. Shema kosa kodesh baruchu batorah, she yehu yisrael makrivim nifna kodesh baruchu nafshas adam. Have you ever seen anywhere that there's human sacrifice in the Torah? Does it not say in the Torah that when a person will sacrifice an animal, it only says that this animal should be sacrificed? He said, my daughter, I made a neder that I will sacrifice whoever comes out of my house. So she asks, Shema hanoder yachol hu shalem leshalem nidroi. Oh, 1 second, sorry. Shema HaKadosh Baruch Hu, did I skip a line? Shema Kol Anoder Yachol Hu, Shelo LeShalem Nidra. So he says to her, I'm not able to go back on my neder. It sounds a little bit like the Ramban. I'm stuck in my neder, even though mistakenly. Omra Le, she responds to him, Harei V'Harei Yaakov Avinu Shenoder Kol Asher Titen Li, V'Nosan Lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shnei Mosar Bonim. Shema Hikriva HaKadosh Baruch Hu Echad Mehem. Yaakov made a neder that when he goes out, that Hashem will protect him. He didn't kill any of his children, the 12 children that Hashem granted him. And when Chana made a neder, Shema hikriva es bona lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, did she sacrifice her child in front of Hashem? And clearly not. She's making very good and tenable arguments to him. By the way, the Chana one is a little bit of a problem because Chana hasn't lived yet, right? So obviously on a prophetic level that we're all referring to, I don't know, but...
Plus, and it's a different neder.
And it's a different...
His thing is, I made the neder, so I have to fulfill it. Not, what kind of netter he made. She's saying, well, they didn't make it, you know, their netter was different than
their
ours.
Their netter was different than ours.
And his argument is, this is what I've said, this is what I have to do.
Right, also, I mean, they're not talking, they're on the same wavelength. I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying, that definitely is something. There is definitely a difference over here, and he feels stuck because of that.
Right, it's not the netter that's a problem, it's the content of the netter.
Exactly. So no, I definitely hear what you're saying. I definitely hear what you're saying, that you're stuck, but the problem is you hear the pain. It's such sad conversation, because she's right when she says all these things. And she says all these things, and he doesn't listen, as you said. When she saw that it was to no avail of being heard, Amra lo hanicheni, let me va'ireid etzel beistin. Let me go to the court of law. Shema yimtzul pesach lenidircha. They might be able to find a pesach, which is an opening to the neder. By the way, just a thought. It is interesting. We saw one reason why it might be that his name is Yiftach, because he was the one who opened up the battle. But there's also an irony in the fact that it's Yiftach, almost like, surely he can open. Meaning it's like, Yiftach. Shouldn't he open? Right? Why can't he open? It's interesting that the one of the focuses of his life is around not finding the Pesach, which he should have, perhaps. Just something to think about. So she's off to Beis Din. How do we know that she wanted to do this? Shene Emar says in the Pasuk, Harpe mimenu, let me go, Shnayim Chadashim, 2 months, Ve'elcha v'yaradzi al ha'horim. Let me descend to the mountains. Amar Rabbi Zechariah, V'chiyesh Adam Yored al ha'horim. Do people go down to mountains? That people ascend mountains. The reference of mountains refers to the court. Let the mountains hear the fight of God, which is referring to Sanhedrin. So she goes there for 2 months to beg her case. They did not find a Pesach for him. The Hashem made it in such a way that they were incapable of finding, ironically, the Pesach for his neder. Why not? All of a shachta. So what the Midrash continues to explain, I just left out the middle part, is that the reason why that it was hidden was because of his future sin of killing the children of Ephraim. He massacred another tribe late in the next parak, which we're going to see shortly. But the issue with this is that this is children being punished for parents, then in a certain sense, right? Because we have over here the idea of what did the daughter do to deserve not being very, very heavy stuff. So I was looking around on this particular measure. I didn't find anybody who's
punished somebody before someone's done it.
Exactly. There's two problems with this. There's two problems over here, exactly. Number one, it's something which he hasn't done yet. And number two, it's about his daughter who is not involved in what he's going to do either. So it's a very hard line to take over here. But I think you're going to need to get towards this, because as you pointed out, this couldn't have happened in a vacuum. It needed to have been that this was something which people were talking about and her friends knew about, and she must have made an appeal to someone outside of him, right? As the Midrash is pointing out. So what happened to that appeal, right? So that's what this Midrash is trying to address, and why it was that Hashem hid it from them, why was that people at that time seemed inept to be able to do what was correct, is the tragedy of this whole thing. It seems like that as well. Right. And maybe because that's part of the generation. And also you'll see over here, is this relates to a Medrash we've seen many months ago, which is actually, just if you'll turn, just skipping to the top of the next page, and this is the second paragraph, Pinchas in Yiftach, is on a similar notion. It says, "V'lo ha'yasham Pinchas shi'atir es nidra." Was Pinchas not there to open his neder then? We know that Pinchas was at the time later on in Shoftim by the Pelegish Begiver, so he must have lived through this period. So where was he in the saga? We saw this. He would probably be quite old, because remember he lives at the time of Moshe, but we don't know exact, because we don't know the exact amount of time that Yeshua had reigned. But we're talking over at least 150 years. But then Pinchas was blessed with... Well, it could be, because you see the period of Shoftim is roughly about 200 years, if I'm not mistaken. Roughly about 200 years. or it could even be more than that. And Yeshua was at least the 14 years of conquering and division, maybe another 7 years there as well. So, and Pinchas was a grown man at the time of leaving Mitzrayim, because he needed to be exempt from being killed before the 20 to 60 old people. So he's definitely quite old, but we know he's alive now. So the question is, where the mission of his... Well, we know he's around. So the question is, so why...
Is somebody else named Pinchas?
Where is there an explicit...
At the end of Shoftim. At the end of Shoftim, we see Pinchas arriving in the war effort against Binyamin, which means to say that the fact that he's omitted here must mean that he's not saying something for a reason. That's the space that we're trying to fill up over here. And so what happens? Ela Pinchas Omar, Hu tzarich li v'ani alech etzloi, he needs me and I should go to him. I'm the general, I should go to Pinchas. By the way, in other versions of this Midrash, Pinchas adds in a little thing. He says, I'm the prophet of God. So I should, which is interesting, just meaning, right, so meaning both of them are living in their right, their temples of their elevated status. Between the two of them, messing around, not getting the act together, then she was lost. Hada de Braisa Amra, that's what the Braisa, which is a Tanatic teaching, says. That this is in Aramaic, that between the midwife and the mother, the baby dies, which means to say that both people need to be putting in their full effort. The Shneim Nen Shubadamea Shalnara, and both of them were punished severely for this. Yiftach Meis Benishira Sevarim. So Yiftach died with his limbs falling off, meaning he had some form of leprosy that led to his being slowly disintegrating. And how do we know this? Because his wherever he went, different body limbs would fall off. While you crave covering or sasham that bury him in those particular areas, we're going to see next week. That Yiftach died and was buried in the cities, plural of Gilad. He was buried in various places because he did not die at once, unfortunately. So meaning to say, as severe, he did not as a whole person, right? And so as terrible as what he did was, you just have to realize also there's nothing goes unaccounted for. Pinchas, not let me mention Yirah HaKodesh, Pinchas no longer had the divine spirit. Right, how do you say Pinchas ben Elazar Nagid Haya Aleihem? We did this when we discussed Pinchas. Pinchas was a leader over them. Hu Nagid Aleihem Ein Ksiv, it doesn't say he is Ela Nagid Haya. He was previously Lifnim Lefanim Hashem Imoy. Hashem was with him before, meaning to say Hashem abandoned him after this incident. So really, it's a tragedy. This is like, you know, the Lahavdil. This is the Hamlet. You know, everybody suffers, and nobody's coming out here clean. She either dies or is secluded. He is he dies at a terrible death. Pinchas loses his connection, his direct connection with God. This is really a very sad ending to all of us. But just to conclude, perhaps with today is there are two other aspects which we haven't addressed over here is judgment calls on Pinchas on Yiftach. So we do see a sort of negative tinge over here, the fact that he's punished. But there is also the another aspect. So just if you keep actually on the same page, the paragraph before. The reason why this is out of order is I just like to go conceptually in order rather than just in the order of the Medrash. And this is that there's a judgment call made on his this is the top paragraph on page 10. There's a judgment call made on his decision. Dalad hein shetovin shelaiko hagen. Four people in Tanakh made a request which was not an acceptable request to make in the first place. Legimel nitzan kohagen. Three were answered appropriately even though they made a mistake in their request. And one was not answered appropriately. Eliezer Ever Abraham, Eliezer the son of Abraham. What did he? What condition did he make before knowing something which could have gone wrong?
Oh, asking for
right,
a
right, right, exactly. So he said, whoever comes out and is going to do such and such and such will be the daughter. Now, what would happen if somebody really inappropriate for Yitzhak would do that? Is that how? What would happen then? Kalev, what happened with Kalev? This is a harder one. What? Kalev had a daughter as well, and he said, whoever conquers such and such city will be married to her. Right. So the question is, so what happens if you had just a mighty strong man who was a very bad person to conquer the city? Shaul, what happened with Shaul as well? Yeah, so Shaul made a, where was it? Just, let me just pull this out. Shaul made a mistake as well. It says, he says, he said, oh yeah, with Goliath. He said, with David, he said, whoever kills Goliath will marry my daughter, become rich, and if he's a slave, will be freed. And the question is, so what happens, again, you're going to marry anybody to your daughter based on that. And finally, Yiftach. I just skipped to the Yiftach part, which is relevant to us. Yiftach, v'ayo ayase eshe yetze v'esi v'alisi olo l'ashem. Ha! Ilu yotza chamor o kelev echad o chasul achas hayo ma'alei olav ma'alei olav. What happens if something inappropriate even for sacrifice would have walked out? Right? A cat would have walked out. Cats have no, there's no business with being close to Hashem, meaning in terms of the sacrificial service. Therefore, v'zimen na'akosh baruch shalok ha'avim. So Hashem says, you want to play games? You want to play games with my service? I'm going to play games with you, in a sense, which is very, very scary kind of judgment over here. How do you say, Vayavo Yiftach v'hinei bito yotzes likrasa? And that's why his daughter's coming out. So you just also see the tragedy within this, just the complexities, right? Meaning, besides the judgment calls which he made which are wrong, he's also being just criticized, and just think about the ramifications of your actions, which is again, if we ask what were his intents, whatever they were, and however noble or ignoble they were, at this point in time we see that he wasn't fully thinking about what was happening, yeah. And he's punished for that. Anyway, so I'd like to do at the beginning of next week, as we pull this together.
Yeah, like the